They could not, absolutely could not lay off people because that was the purpose of the business. And that then began, put the sort of the fire under the leadership team to make a whole series of pivots to try to preserve the company, but most importantly, preserve the commitment they had made to those young socially abandoned men.
What Alejandro's real power and richness inside of pizza, it's the knowledge they have of creating programs for integrating people that are socially abandoned into enterprises.
This is Mission to Scale, a podcast that reveals the tools, mindsets, and strategies that organizations and funders need to make the most impact. Because the world's biggest problems need solutions at scale. I'm your host, Dan Borelovitz. We're all aware of the devastating impacts of COVID-19. In spite of this, we've also seen a lot of ingenuity and have witnessed the human strength to survive and help others along the way. In the final episode of our special series with Stanford Social Innovation Review, or SSIR, we'll be diving into the story of a social entrepreneur who leveraged purpose through crisis. We are joined by Gregory Unruh and Fernanda Arriola, co-authors of the SSIR article, Preserving Social Purpose Amid a Global Pandemic. We'll be talking to Gregory and Fernanda about the social enterprise Pixa, which began as a social inclusion vehicle for homeless adults in Mexico City. On the show, we'll be talking about leveraging your purpose to survive a crisis and what other social enterprises can learn from the Pixa model.
In Mexico, we mispronounce pizza. We say pizza, like if it had a C. So the title of the enterprise is actually sort of a joke on how Mexicans actually call Mexican pizzas. And the start of the story is a young entrepreneur, of which I'm sure we're going to be speaking a lot about.
That's Fernanda, Dean of Faculty and Research at ISC Paris. And the name of the young man who became the central character of their SSIR piece is Alejandro Souza.
He did studies in Babson. He did studies in Colombia. And one of his assignments in Colombia was actually finding a story for a journalism class and writing it down. So in order to find a story, he went into the streets of New York and he found Joe. And Joe was a person who was living in the streets. And he spent some nights living in the streets with Joe. And actually, he figured out this difficulty of people reintegrating in the normal world once you become homeless. He saw that it's not only about associations or it's not only about like housing. It includes a lot of psychological, you know, following up. It includes a lot of opportunity finding. It includes how society sees you as someone who was formerly living in the streets. But most importantly, you need a job. And people who don't have an address, who don't have papers, who haven't worked for a while, who have been living in another environment, can hardly get a job. So I think that was like the sentiment that turned around.
So what I think is very interesting is he's kind of an archetype of this new type of social entrepreneur that understands, you know, not just business, but understands how the governmental policy sector works and how the nonprofit NGO world works. He's what we often call a cross-sectoral athlete, right? He's trained in each of those three different institutions or those three different areas. And he, you know, that understanding about how each of those sectors plays a role in tackling these really big and important environmental and social problems we're facing. And oftentimes these really big important ones, things like homelessness or social abandonment of the, you know, certain populations in the community, right? Each of the different sectors is playing a role. You know, the government obviously has its support system for welfare and those types of things. But then you have charitable nonprofit organizations. But then there's a big role that companies could play. And that's where, you know, I think one of Alejandro's insights came after being with Joe, seeing the challenges of people living on the streets and the limitations of the nonprofit sector and the government to build opportunities to reinsert socially abandoned people into the economy, into the workforce. And he saw an opportunity there. And that was one of the elements behind Pixa, was to build not just a for-profit social enterprise, but actually build a way to help people go from being on the streets, developing the skills and knowledge and capabilities so that they could actually get a job, gain self-sufficiency, gain personal independence, and then be able to become happy, productive members of society.
It's not only the social purpose worth mentioning about Pixa. It's important to note that the social enterprise sold an outstanding product, innovative pizzas made from locally grown organic and traditionally Mexican ingredients.
It's very interesting because you know how sometimes, social entrepreneurship focuses a lot on the outside, right? So he's producing pizzas made out of blue corn, which is obviously corn is the main ingredient of all food in Mexico. So it's a crust made of corn. It only has Mexican ingredients, 100% Mexican. There's even like a pizza with grasshoppers. And he tries to produce everything, locally with local producers and everything. So here we have the normal side of a story of a socially engaged or of a social entrepreneurial project. But there's something very specific about this project because Alejandro always says that this is a social project, a social empowerment project hidden inside of a pizzeria. And I'm like, I don't understand. What are you saying? He said the pizzeria is just like a tent that is covering a system behind that is called the route of change, in which he goes to different residences where homeless people live for a certain amount of time. He's made a profile of people that are likely to be helped to be reinserted into the professional world. In the end, they have a job. Once they have a job, they have a salary. Once they have a salary, they can establish themselves.
Gregory, in your experience, the product is presumably absolutely critical. The whole thing hangs off the product first in some way. If that doesn't work, then the rest doesn't happen. Is that right, or is it more of a blend than that?
The business model requires multiple pieces to function together. Clearly, if you don't have a product or service and you want to be a for-profit company, even if you have a social mission behind it, if you don't have a product or service that people want, need, and can pay for, you're going to have a hard time. So it was really, really important. And, I think another thing that was important was the motivation to create this really new, innovative type of pizza that honors the tradition and things. It was something new. And it really was quite a hit with the foodies in Mexico City.
Earlier, you heard Fernanda mention roots of change. Generally, public social programs would only address partial aspects of a socioeconomic issue. In the case of homelessness, this could be in the form of providing temporary shelter. By contrast, Pixa looks at homelessness more comprehensively. Their approach was to invite young men to join Route to Change, a program that helped empower participants towards employment and self-reliance.
The first thing to do is the social reinsertion pathway is built into the product side of the business, right? So the way it works is for every fifth slice of pizza sold to a customer, one free slice of pizza is to deliver to someone on the street. And so there comes a time when they make a trip with a van down to the shelter or wherever the community is located, and they begin to hand out slices of pizza. And that's the first interaction between Pixa and the young men that may or may not become involved in the Route of Change. But that's the first step. And there's a series of trust building processes, right? The first piece, we get to know each other. We come back and get a second piece, and then it builds from there. And there's a series of steps, and there's a number of sort of physical artifacts that help people stay on track. And one is this wristband that you can get, and it has symbols for each of the steps. So first a shower, and then a haircut, and then a number of steps. And once they complete that first part of the Route of Change, then they have an opportunity to come and begin working at the pizzeria, and then begin to develop both sort of the professional skills of working and collaborating with a team and working in a work environment, but also the other sort of life skills that we need in order to live an independent life. So that the Route of Change then has, it really is a route. It's a series of steps that builds just from an initial contact and trust building all the way up to a point where I, you know, the goal is after the participant has worked at PIXA and is successful, that they go off and get another job in a different, you know, maybe a hostelry or a restaurant industry and create space then for new people to come into the route of change process.
So then employees, I believe, are not expected to stay working at PIXA indefinitely. Why is that?
The idea is to have as many people get through the route of change and become independent as possible. If they occupied all of the restaurant positions, then you couldn't bring in new people. So the idea is ultimately that people, you know, the birds can fly and they go off and you can bring in new people and continue the development process for more and more change agents, as they're called.
And I would mention two important factors. The first is that it's a natural effect. People see other opportunities. People feel confident about themselves. Perhaps they can make more money. Perhaps they meet someone, they get married, et cetera. Everything that can happen in a normal life. And the other important thing is scalability. You know, there's a certain number of pizzerias that you can open in Mexico City. So also there's this constraint of, you know, Alejandro would want 2,000 people running through the program every year, but he's limited by the number of spaces. And this is something that we can also speak further, because that's sort of some sort of the magic that he was trying to find. And it's important because it's a very important concept in entrepreneurship. You know, how do you make this scalable? And his scalability is, how do I make more people come into the program?
So how does this model tie profit and impact? So of course, the pizzas are sold, people pay for them, they're generating some money, hopefully some profit. Just talk a bit more about, is that profit enough to then cover the costs of all the programs that he's running?
The restaurant needs to be profitable enough to make the idea be doable. So Alejandro has perfectly in his mind this idea that the most important thing is purpose, but if the money is not there, the purpose will not be able to exist. So it gives sense to money making. It's just not money making. It's maintaining a suitable and viable economic model that can make this purpose exist.
I would add too that I think this is an important element of the PIXA model is, so you know, when most corporations engage in something like corporate social responsibility, right? What they're doing is they're going out and making some kind of contribution, or they're trying to, as economists would say, they're trying to, you know, internalize the externalities. The externalities are the damage they're causing, right? But so they're using their profits to subsidize that problem. Now, what PIXA has done, what Alejandro has done, has built the social benefit directly into the business model. The people he is trying to help are actually very vital inputs to the production process. You know, you can't make pizza without a pizza chef. You can't serve customers without waiters. So he's built his target beneficiaries into the business model so that you can't separate the profit and the purpose. They are interconnected, right? And as long as the restaurant succeeds profitably, you're also then creating this social value. And then you can scale up, as Fernanda pointed out, by every time you add a new restaurant, you're scaling up your impact because you have to hire more people. And if you're constantly and exclusively hiring from this profile of socially abandoned individuals, you are having the concomitant social impact simultaneously.
So clearly there's a big difference between this initiative, because it's so baked in, the commercial viability of the business and the impact are just in complete lockstep. Is there anything else that's different from a typical sort of corporate responsibility initiative that a company might do?
I would say, I mean, we've mentioned the word purpose, and the article starts with the word purpose. And this is something that I don't think we can even speak enough about or with sufficient passion to let you know what it signifies. Sometimes we speak in companies about mission and vision, and those are ways of transmitting where we're heading and what we are. But the purpose is really the reason why we exist. And if the purpose is not viable today, and Alejandro said it with the pandemic, if we cannot continue to provide a viable and sustainable way of living to homeless people, we stop this. If the purpose cannot be lived through the economic model of the current business, it makes no sense to continue with it.
So before the pandemic, so I've seen a number of these and worked with a couple of these food models where people are basically using the products, the food, as a way to hire people and get them to stand up on their own feet. The challenge I've always seen in other economies is that it's very difficult to generate enough profit to be able to actually then pay to do all that additional work you have to do to bring in people and support them. Do you know, before the pandemic, was this business profitable enough to be able to actually bring people in, hire them and conduct the social mission? Or did they have to do what I know a number of others have done, which is get grants and things like that to sort of subsidize some of the other work?
The pizzeria business was so successful as, you know, the concept itself that I think it took them 3 months to break even. But his thing was the scalability. I want to help more people. So he knew that he didn't have the resources for the scalability. He finally got some investors. There's a whole story behind that. But anyway, let's say he had the investors. He had this money that he needs to have, you know, everything becomes different, a marketing director, a managing director, a communications director, everything, with the idea of selling even more pizzas and obviously hiring more people. So this is a pre-pandemic. Everything's going great. He thinks that they'll be at break-even in less than a year and that probably then he'll start in a franchise model. That's where he's at.
I think one of the key things you talk about in the article is this difference between tangible and intangible values. Could you talk through that a little bit? What are they and how do they play out in terms of Pixar?
Yeah, I'd be happy to talk about that. And that's one of the very interesting elements. So, you know, the tangible assets are the things we train people in business school to manage, right? Because they're the things you can count. You know, you can count the amount of money in your bank account. You can count the inventory in your warehouse. You can count the number of employees. And those are things easy to manage. Intangible value, when we deal with it traditionally in business, we tend to think of brand, right? Brand value. And we recognize that the brand has a value, but you know, the question in terms of managing it, you know, where is it located? Because you can't take your, you own the logo, right? Or you know, the name of your company, you know, if you're Nike, you own the swoosh, but is the intangible value in that swoosh? And the answer is no. And so the question is, well, okay, where is the value? And it turns out that value is not stored by the company. It actually is housed in people's heads, because the real value the Nike swoosh has is the impression it causes in Nike customers, right? And then, you know, that impression we have about the company is what then motivates our affinity and our decisions either towards or away from the company.
At the beginning of 2018, Pixar was on track to double its social impact after securing new funding for expansion. But in March 2020, COVID-19 hit Mexico. Pixar collapsed, and their sales went down between 90 to 98%. I asked Gregory about the pivots Pixar made in order to survive.
So they realized early on that because of the shutdowns, they couldn't open the restaurants, but they still could produce, you know, they still had restaurants and kitchens where they could produce pizzas. So again, once again, they reached out to their customers and they began what is known as a base of the pyramid business model. So base of the pyramid recognizes that, you know, that at the top of the pyramid, you have the wealthy countries with lots of disposable income, but they're a small number, right? They're 20% or less of the population, maybe closer to 10 or 5%. And then at the base of the pyramid, you have people with a lot less disposable income, but there's a lot more of them, right? And so if you can come up with a business vehicle that allows you to reach, you know, distribute and reach those populations, it can be quite economic. And so they came up with this brilliant idea is we'll tap into our customers that really, you know, are really loyal to Pixar and ask them if they would be willing to buy frozen pizzas. So that here's a product shift. They went from fresh pizzas served in restaurants to now producing frozen pizzas and then delivering them to these customers. And they, you know, they measured the size of a typical Mexican freezer and figured out, you know, how many pizzas could fit it in, packaged it in that size, and then delivered it to these people who could purchase them at wholesale, and then they could sell them to their friends and family. And this became then another vehicle that allowed them to continue to employ the agents of change, making the pizzas and freezing the pizzas and delivering them, and keep business going in the midst of this pandemic.
So they managed to weather the pandemic through a bunch of pretty impressive innovations. They managed to hold on to their staff. And now the question is, how do you scale? So what are the options, you think, for Pixar, and what are their plans?
Actually, they restructured the company into three different sort of lines of business. So there's the traditional pizzerias that have now reopened. There's the other that goes into all the, well, selling other related products and everything. But they have a third one, which is the production, because they are now experts in the production. They are starting to work with two things, either the production of other items in black kitchens for other food providers, or in selling their products in retail stores.
And tell us about franchising, because it sounds like they've got a number of routes that are exploring, but then also franchising would be taking this to other places. And honestly, when I read this article, I mean, other than feeling hungry immediately, I thought, oh my God, we need this in San Francisco. We need it in London. We need it in cities all over the world. So what are they thinking about the franchise?
I think the franchise model, they are questioning it, because what they know is that the value is not the pizzeria. What Alejandro's real power and richness inside of pizza, it's the knowledge they have of creating programs for integrating people that are socially abandoned into enterprises. So I think the franchising that they are working on is not the franchising of pizza itself, is the franchising of the route of change.
Yeah, this is a really interesting piece. I mean, so that there's a series of pivots, right? The pivot to the frozen pizzas and the base of the pyramid, that then was scaled up to looking at retail distribution, right? So your Mama Celeste pizza, when you go to the grocery store in the freezer section, you could also have a pizza brand in there along with that. And, you know, that's, again, been driven by, they've been reaching out to distribution networks that are also purpose-driven. But you're right. Then when you think about franchising, you have the two sides of the model. You have the pizza restaurant side, but really, as Fernanda points out very importantly, they feel that the real value, this purpose intellectual property, the purpose IP, is the route of change model. And it's the route of change model has proven its success and can be adopted more broadly by existing companies, which, you know, considering that some of the groups they're talking with can hire thousands of people, this can be a very powerful way to scale up the impact of this route of change and their purpose if they can get others to adopt it. So it's not franchising the pizza side, it's franchising the program.
So we've told a great story here about Pixar, and there's been many successes as well as challenges. I want to just focus a moment on those challenges, because it is not all easy, despite the story overall being good. And so, interested in the challenges, Pixar's challenges, and what they may be facing now and in the future, and then also how those lessons might be generalized to others.
Because it's the intangible values that purpose generate, it's very reliant on Alejandro. Now, you know, I think what Alejandro's very good at is imbuing other people and inviting other people to take on and make that purpose their own. One of the ways we saw it was some of the branch managers were given an opportunity, you know, at the beginning of the pandemic, you know, saying, hey, you don't have to do anything, but, you know, if we could scale back your pay, or if we could delay payment, that would help us survive. And many of them responded by cutting their salaries in half or delaying payment. You know, that's because they took on the purpose. So Alejandro is very good at doing that, but this is true in many entrepreneurial enterprises. One of the big challenges, if it's dependent on the power, the passion, the motivation, and the vision of a single individual, it can be really problematic. And so building some kind of process by which that passion, that engagement, that investment spreads and becomes the ownership of the other key people and employees in the organization is really, really important and a real challenge.
What can other social enterprises learn from the Pixar model?
First of all, never forget the economic model. If you're not profitable, you will not make it. Second is speak about it like crazy, because, you know, this comes from passion. And there's a very interesting TED talk about, you know, how to create a movement. And if you get one follower, the first person that believes in you, build on that fellowship, build on what this person says about that. Like, really get feedback in order to really understand what is the complexity of the model you're trying to resolve.
So, you know, there's this sort of Tom's shoes model where, you know, we have our model and we give away the shoes. or we give away a shirt or whatever we are. That's fine. But what I think the refinement that Pixa did was build the recipient, you know, stakeholders directly into the business model, right? And so if we can begin to think about how do we actually build, you know, whoever the stakeholders are, whether they're people on the streets, whether they're people that don't have access to the education, whether it's the natural environment, and maybe it's the spotted owls or the great whales. If you can take that additional thinking to like, okay, how can we make and ensure that the positive impact and the beneficiaries of the stakeholders is actually built into the business model. It's not peripheral. It's built into the business model. That was an important step that I think Pixa was able to really sort of nail down in a way that many other social enterprises haven't.
What's a call to action? If you had one call to action that you want our listeners to take away from this conversation, what would it be?
Social entrepreneurship, it's not only what you give outside, it's what you're doing inside. And that includes thinking about how are you going to treat your employees? How are you going to give benefits? How are you going to do the governance? Who's going to be making the decision making? How are you going to be collaborating? There's a lot of simplicity in some of these solutions for making people be happier at work. Perhaps that's what you want to do inside, that people are happy. There's many solutions for making your product a better, more inclusive product. So I invite people to go beyond this obsession we have today with technology, because usually purpose has more to do with values and humanity. And those are things that can be built, not with Legos, but with a lot of heart.
If you want to dive deeper into the topics discussed today, get a copy of the summer 2022 issue of the SSIR magazine, available on May 26. You can read the article co-written by Gregory and Fernanda, titled Preserving Social Purpose Amid a Global Pandemic. A link to purchase the magazine is in our show notes. And of course, you'll find many other fascinating articles in there too. Before we go, we'd like to thank SSIR for the work that they do and for partnering with us in this series. That's it for our special series. If you missed previous episodes, we urge you to catch up and listen back to the incredible stories and practical insights from SSIR authors. We'll be back soon with a brand new season. So continue to follow us on social media at Spring Impact and stay tuned for our season 2 launch. If you love Mission to Scale, please recommend our show to a friend or colleague. You can subscribe or follow our podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Mission to Scale is produced by Spring Impact and Human Group Media. If you want to learn more about our work at Spring Impact, visit springimpact.org and follow us at Spring Impact on Twitter. Thank you.